My hands are a little dirty.
So am I.
If you're gonna die, and you knew you were gonna die, and you could choose how, what would you choose?
There's kids in there, and I want to get them out.
Hey guys and gals, and welcome to the Conduit Speaks podcast for, Wednesday, September 26th, 2012. Feeling pretty good today, although, sadly, something rather shocking came across the interwebs not too long ago, about a young woman, Sarah Ann Jones, who I have talked about. I reviewed a film she was in called Toad Road, and it appears that with very little information available right now, that on September 4th, Sarah died. And like I said, we don't have details, and, you know, nor should I be privy to any of those details. I didn't know Sarah personally, and I really only had experience with her through her performance in Toad Road, which I quite enjoyed. But I just wanted to take a moment to say that and to send my my deepest sympathies to her friends and family, and I wrote a little piece about her on the website in memory of, and just hoping that wherever she is now, she's at peace. And again, I don't know if I don't know the why or the how. I don't know if she was sick. I don't know if she was in an accident, etc., etc. But I believe she was only 24 years old. So, Sarah Ann Jones, thank you for your performance in Toad Road. And wherever you are, I hope you're at peace. So, we're going to go ahead and dedicate this show, as lame or inconsequential as that may seem. We're going to dedicate this episode of the Conduit Speaks podcast to Sarah Ann Jones, her performance in Toad Road, and in her memory, obviously taken far too soon. So, with that being said, the only other thing I wanted to relay to everybody is that we're going to be starting up our 31 days of Halloween, which will start, obviously, October 1st and run through October 31st. I will be watching and reviewing a different film every day for 31 days, and you can find out what films I'll be talking about each day and what I thought of each of those films each day in a mini-review that will be posted on theconduitspeaks.com and also on the Facebook page for The Conduit Speaks. So play along if you like, or just check them out and see what's going on. This year I decided to focus on anthology films, 80s horror, and sci-fi horror. So I went with a little bit of a theme this year, as it's the fifth year I've been doing it, and it was getting kind of hard to pick movies that I hadn't seen, so I kind of picked some categories that would send me down memory lane, if you will, and revisit some films I haven't seen in some cases, 2 decades. So, other than that, I think things are going well. Things are busy. We have a ton of films to look at, to review, to talk about. through the website and the podcast. So without further ado, we'll move on to the first film for this episode is 2012's Compliance. And Compliance was written and directed by Craig Zobel. Stars Ann Dowd as Sandra and Dreema Walker as Becky. And Compliance is based on real life events, scarily. But that being said, this is not one of those films where you know, you see the tag at the beginning of the movie based on true events, and it's rather muddled or confusing as to where it came from. If you go on Wikipedia and Wiki Compliance, the film, you can get all kinds of information there and links to the actual happenings. But essentially, and you may remember this, it's about a prank caller who convinces a fast food restaurant manager to interrogate a young employee. And the gist of the story is Ann Dowd, who again plays Sandra, is the manager of a fast food restaurant, and she gets a phone call from someone claiming to be an Officer Daniels, who believes that one of her employees, who through a very vague description turns out to be Dreema Walker's character Becky, has done something not so nice. So what we have is a very tense and oddly disturbing situation where, against her better judgment, Sandra pulls Becky aside back into the manager's office and begins to question her through Officer Daniels' inquiries as to whether or not she has been responsible for a crime. And I think when you're watching this, if you don't know about the true documented criminal case behind this, some of the things that go on here and the details of the interrogation are just too strange and awful to fathom. I mean, questions arise throughout, like, you know, why didn't anyone call the cops sooner? Officer Daniels basically states that there's no other police in the area that can handle this. He's not able to be there. They have to detain the girl and take care of the situation. So there's a ton of moments throughout this film where you're just like, are you fucking kidding me? There's no way this would happen. So again, if you Wiki Compliance, you can read documented step-by-step accounts of how this actually happened and what went down, and realize that it's not too far from the truth. Now, the one thing that is different is that Becky in the film is portrayed as not a bad kid, just in a slightly darker light, and maybe as more of a gray character than the actual young woman that this happened to. And because of that, I think that since this is based on actual events, I wonder if the filmmakers did that to try and make it seem more realistic because of the ridiculous things that this girl's forced to do, and it would be easier to believe if there was some shadow of doubt as to whether or not she was guilty. From all accounts and appearances in real life, quote unquote, this girl was very, very innocent, very, I don't know what how you would describe it, but just not the type of person you would suspect this of at all. So, all kinds of awful things, you know, strip searches, cavity searches, things that just you can't believe the employer would subject their employee to, that the employee would quote unquote comply with. And it is a rather fascinating and difficult film to watch. There's without a doubt a lot of eye rolling that's going to go into watching this, and I think that if you know they weren't able to hang their head on the fact that did I just say hang their head? Not their whole head, just their hat, on the fact that this actually happened, this movie would have been a complete failure. But as is the case, you know, real life is oftentimes more fantastic than fiction. So I can recommend this as a film that, you know, is going to give you incredible what the fuck moments. But if you can't continually remind yourself and keep in mind the fact that this actually happened, then it's just gonna seem too insane to believe. The performances here are, you know, very solid and believable. Especially of note is Anne Dowd as Sandra, as she kind of goes through and runs the gamut of all these various emotions and this inner turmoil of, you know, carrying out this supposed police officer's requests. And Drema Walker is a good and admirable actor who portrays the type of character that the filmmaker wanted her to be excellently. So, Compliance, yeah, go check it out and read up about the real case. And the one of the more interesting things about the case, and not to discount what Becky went through, or this character Becky, is the way that that they caught the guy in real life, who incidentally wasn't even in the same state as the particular McDonald's that he had called, and also the kind of the long background of series of events and quote unquote pranks that were attempted that didn't get taken this far. So as well as everyone's punishments for the crime. You won't believe what some of these people were and were not sentenced to. So that's 2012's Compliance. I'd probably give that film a 7 out of 10. Again, despite the fact that you can keep calling upon the reality of the narrative, it's still a lot to swallow and a lot to sit through. It's a film that's going to really make you angry while you're watching it, because you're going to want to punch people in the face. So for the next one, I'm going to talk about 2012's Crossbearer. It's written and directed by Adam Albrandt, and stars Isaac Williams as the Crossbearer and Natalie Jean as Heather. There's a bunch of other actors and characters that kind of float in and out of the periphery of the story, but those are the primaries. And essentially, Heather, who is kind of a down on her luck stripper, has a live-in girlfriend who's touched upon briefly here, who has a baby and a drug problem. And actually, I guess their boss at the strip club, Harry, portrayed by J.D. Brown, should be noted too, because he's just, you know, your typical slime ball. But he kind of, you know, rules the strip club with an iron fist, and has all the girls wrapped around his fingers. They essentially are taxed with going to this old rundown warehouse where this drug dealer lives and scoring some drugs for Harry, and that's kind of the vehicle that gets everyone to this location. And while this is going on and you're meeting Heather and all the people in her world, you're also privy to the voiceover and actions of the Crossbearer. Now, the Crossbearer is essentially, how to put it, he is kind of a religious freak. He thinks that he has an obligation and duty to kind of purify the earth. And he goes about stalking, watching, capturing, and killing what he considers to be kind of the scum of the earth, the dregs, if you will. Prostitutes, criminals, people who are, in his mind, not living according to the word of God. So, a la Sackhead Jason in Friday the 13th, he wears a similar getup. You do see him right from the beginning without it on, so it's not like, played as a mystery where you're trying to figure out who the Crossbearer is. You never really do find out who he is. You just know it's a guy and kind of what his motivations are. And he dispatches of his victims in the same way, with a carpenter's hammer. And that usually involves, just bludgeoning them to death and ripping their scalp open with the claw end of it. So there's not a whole ton of, I don't know, there is a story here. It's just one of those that I heard this compared to another film, Sweatshop, in a good way, and that is an apt comparison. If you haven't seen Sweatshop, it's notable for essentially a group of kids throwing an illegal rave in a warehouse and a homicidal maniac in there with a giant club. It's essentially like a huge anvil attached to a metal pole, and they get trapped in there. Killer goes berserk and just destroys everybody. And it's much the same thing here. There are some genuine attempts by Adam Albrandt to kind of get us to sympathize with Heather and to draw us in, but other than Heather, every other character except for Heather and the Crossbearer are essentially like, vapid, empty shells. They serve no other purpose other than to be killed, and that's fine. But for me, I've grown tired of the, get all these people in one place and just slaughter them type of film. There are a few decent gore moments in here. A lot of it is, with impacts happening close up or impacts happening off screen, and then you get the aftermath. And like I said, with the hammer, once these people are all in the warehouse and they're locked in, and they realize that not only is the drug deal gone bad, but there's somebody else in there after them, it just becomes really monotonous. And the fact that he uses the same weapon to kill everybody really makes it even more monotonous. So there's that. It's a throwback in a sense to the Halloween, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, old school slasher type film, where it boils down to kind of the killer and the final girl. So this is another film that I can't say that I was blown away by or even all that engaged with throughout. It looks fantastic. There's a pretty good score and sound design throughout. Albrandt really, I think, has a good grasp on what he wants to do and how he's doing it, and he does it very stylistically. I think in cases like this where you have, really low budget independent films, he was able, as I said, to make it look and sound fantastic, but then you run into the fact that, for the most part, you have actors who don't have a lot of experience, aren't being paid, or are being paid very little. Sometimes your friends are in it. And J.D. Brown, who played Harry, the strip club owner, he was pretty good in it. Every once in a while, his performance rubbed me the wrong way. Natalie Jean had more strong moments than weak ones, but you get a lot of uneven performances here, and a lot of dumb things done. And one thing that really irked me, and I don't think this is a spoiler at all, because I don't like to do spoilers, but the crossbow, the guy's killing everybody with this hammer, and a lot of the movie, he's walking around menacingly, kind of silhouetted, and you can see the hammer hanging out of his hand. Then there's this one scene where, like, you see him carrying this, like, brushed chrome briefcase type thing, and I think it's supposed to be done as, like, a real dramatic moment where people are supposed to see what he's doing and go, "Oh shit, here we go." But, like, he carries this brushed nickel briefcase, and he's in the warehouse getting ready to kill all these people, and he sits it down, opens it up, and, like, takes this bloody hammer out of it and heads out. And I'm thinking to myself, like, it's a fucking carpenter's hammer. Like, you really need to carry it around in a chrome briefcase or whatever it was, because you're obviously not walking down the street in this, like, bloody jumpsuit with a hood over your head. And even if you took the hood off, you couldn't walk casually down the street looking the way that you did. You're not fooling or hiding anything. So that was kind of something that was weird and silly and kind of irked me, that we didn't see anything else in the briefcase, and it appeared that he wasn't carrying anything else in the briefcase. He had this briefcase simply for his hammer. So that was interesting. I'd probably give Crossbearer a 6 out of 10. And it's showing around here and there. It's not gonna get a wide DVD release very soon, I think. But I think it will be available at some point. And I'll keep you posted on this on the website throughout. So I've given you the best idea I can of what it's about, and hopefully that'll help you know if you're into it or not. So. The last film for the show is 2012's I Am a Ghost, and this is written and directed by H.P. Mendoza and starring Anna Ishida as Emily and Jeannie Baroga as Sylvia, or the disembodied voice Sylvia. And this is a film that I came upon, I want to say, via Cortez the Killer over at the Planet of Terror, who I should definitely give a shout out for putting me in touch with H.P. Mendoza. This film follows a troubled spirit, Emily, who essentially is haunting her house day after day after day, wondering why she can't leave, why she can't get out. And suddenly we see kind of a patient-therapist relationship form when Sylvia's disembodied voice shows up and is trying to talk Emily through getting out of her house. I don't know if you guys are going to be able to hear that, but again, we have a very elderly pug, and unfortunately, he's begun losing his eyesight. So as I'm recording this, he is wandering around, doing what pugs do, and snorting and sniffling. So, if you hear that in the background, That's what it is. I can't apologize too much for it, as he is a member of our family. We love him dearly. So, as he does not like being left alone in his old age, if you hear it, it is what it is. Say hello to Nigel. In any event, I Am a Ghost is pretty remarkable. It's notable for being perhaps a ghost movie, like none you've ever seen before. Right from the beginning, we're told that Emily is a ghost, that she goes from, moments of total realization of that to kind of not knowing at all what's going on with her and what her fate has been. I think what's so interesting about this is that Mendoza was able to take scenes of Emily, for example, cooking breakfast, waking up, going out of the house, and we don't see what's on the other side of the door, but going out of the house and continually repeating these same actions over and over and over, but cutting and reintroducing and examining them and showing us them from different moments of time in such a way that he was able to actually engage us. And there's a ton of that falls on the shoulders of Anna Ishida, who is absolutely spellbinding as Emily. And as I went into this film not knowing much, if anything, about it, which was really cool, because once Sylvia, Jeannie Baraga, was introduced and started talking to Emily and letting her know, like, Emily can't see Sylvia and Sylvia can't see Emily, but they can hear each other. It was so odd to hear that disembodied voice start coming through, and as that kind of unfolds, you start to realize exactly what the purpose and point of this is. I mean, you have Emily, it's almost like she's, trapped in an old Victorian, well, it's not old to her, trapped in a Victorian home, dressed, of the time. And you come to realize that Sylvia is in the same home with the current owners, and Emily, just by going through these daily, routine actions that she would have done in life, is actually haunting the home. So it's pretty weird and fantastical and wonderful, and the way it's shot visually. This is out there right now, playing at festivals. You definitely need to keep an eye on it and take a look at it when it's released, because I don't want to give too much away about the visual style. Just the way it's actually presented on the screen is very interesting and pretty cool approach to it. So, you have a film and a filmmaker who's drawing you in technically to the point where what you're looking at, what you're hearing, what you're feeling from those two elements, is submersing you into this film in a way that's very, very rare. And then, of course, with these two amazing women, their performances, the way they play off one another, the fear, the curiosity, the frustration. Emily and Sylvia, they both become very frustrated with the situation, and with each other. There are certain rules and guidelines that Sylvia knows that she has to follow in order to help Emily get out, but then there's other pieces to it where she has no idea what to do or how to go about it. And there is a revelation. It's not so much like a twist, it's almost a natural progression, because, like I said, as Mendoza continually pushes us in and pulls us out with these glimpses into Emily's thought process and her actions, and then the way Sylvia informs her or doesn't. It's a slow progression, and when you actually find out and realize the dynamics of Emily's personality and her lifestyle and her being in life and in death, it's a pretty horrific and jarring and a very subtly, how would you say? It's just so the scares are so subtly done that as they kind of bubble to the surface, it's an incredibly intense feeling of dread that washes over you, and it does so much with so little, and genuinely shocks and freaks you out. This is a film that, as you get going in the year, I watched this a couple weeks ago, and as you get going throughout the year, you know that there's going to be films that you didn't hear about or didn't know about that are going to start popping up and jumping out at you and are going to, be part of your favorite films of the year. And I Am a Ghost absolutely is. It's a 10 out of 10. And I can't say enough about the actors. Again, Anna Ishida and Jeannie Baroga. And of course, the filmmaker, the brilliant H.P. Mendoza. And I hope this is able to become available to a wider audience. It's certainly an acquired taste when it comes to a film, but it's a film that I think, as long as everyone either loves it or hates it, it's probably going to be, 50% of people that see it hate it and 50% love it. That's the best kind of film. It's totally divisive, but it swept me away in every aspect, and I could gush for, another hour about it. I have written up a more detailed review of I Am a Ghost on theconduitspeaks.com. It's a 10 out of 10. Like I said, it's one of my favorite ghost movies of all time, and one of my favorite films of the year. So there you have it. We got our three films in. Theconduitspeaks.com, also the Conduit Speaks Facebook page. If you have any questions, comments, want to get in touch, theconduitspeaks@gmail.com. I hope you enjoyed this episode and looking forward to doing the 31 days of Halloween this year and having you come along for the ride. So, Nigel says thank you and goodbye. I want to thank you for listening. And again, I wanted to make sure that everyone keeps in mind the awful, untimely death of Sarah Ann Jones and keeps her family and friends in thoughts and prayers. Until next time, take care. Bye.